Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
Another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by one of my co-hosts right now, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Where's the other co-host, Ed?
He should be calling in any minute because he just sent me the longest email I think I've ever gotten in my life.
And, I got the same one.
He just popped up on the screen, so let me put him on the air. What's going on, Couture? Except no much.
Not much, just living the dream, you know.
Living the dream, huh? Well, that sounds good. Well, we apologize for our no-show last week. I guess there are multiple reasons why we didn't do a show, mainly because Craig didn't book a guest, but, you know, we can't blame everything on him. So, yeah, we started this last week, but we are back this week. And
because me and Ed could come up with any good ideas for a show topic, so we take the blame, too.
Yeah, that and, of course, everybody was really sad about what happened to the F4W post to worship the Ram, Rammy, who was having a bit of a health problems over the weekend and unfortunately left us Monday morning. So that's another reason why we just didn't have our hearts into doing the show. But we are back, and we will be talking about a bunch of pro wrestling tournaments. And I thought this was going to be an easy subject until I looked at our thread and everybody kept bringing up all these other tournaments that I forgot about, and this might be like a three or four
two or three part
show. Yeah,
I was thinking about it, and I didn't even think about all the tournaments they've had in Japan. Why I didn't think about that, don't ask. But you know, there wasn't just the J Cups in Japan. There were also like the skydiving J Cups and all the stuff from New Japan, just tons and tons of tournaments all over the world. And gosh, we won't even get started with Mexico. Just tons of stuff.
You guys get the email, didn't you?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
We did
I appreciate
very
you
long
sending
email.
The email, but you could have sent the cliff notes.
Dude, I'm copying and pasting. I got no choice. I mean, I don't know that the show's going to be at 7 until like 15 minutes to 7. I'm thinking it's 8 o'clock. I got plenty of time, so.
Okay. Yeah, nice job, Ed.
I gave him a little more time than that, about 20 more. But
speaking of,
anyway.
I have to bone out Reddit the hour mark. I'm going to a play this evening.
You're going to a play?
Yes.
Please tell me your son's involved in this play, or that would be very gay.
It's actually one of my wife's co-workers' kids, but yes, it is a child's play. I'm not going to see the Nutcracker or Swan Lake or anything like that, but they asked me if I could cut it a little bit short tonight. And I said,
I was
sure.
In the Nutcracker when I was a child.
Me too, but it was off the high dive. I hit the water wrong.
No, I'm seriously at a hole in the Nutcracker ballet.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh. What
That's
part
gay,
did you play? It's a little homoerotic.
I played like kind of like an extra, like when they were doing like the, they're having some kind of dance. I don't know what it was, like some kind of ball, and I was a dancer there, so I did all that shit.
I'll be
darned. Imagine how many women you can meet when you do that stuff, because not many guys there.
If you stuff your tights right, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
they also might think you're gay too. But we are going to be joined by our guest. Should I call him already, Craig, or should we wait a while?
No. Go ahead and give him a call now. I've got an intro for him that I drummed up at the last minute. So.
Okay. Well, yeah. You guys talk amongst yourselves here.
We will do that.
You know, I could put a picture of me in the Nutcracker, and it would like be one of the gayest things you've ever seen.
Mm.
But I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's funny. Those things of culture, like you have to get dressed up, and I've never felt so feminine as when I'm, you know, wearing slacks and a tie. You know what I mean? They just rub me the wrong way, and then you have to go and watch these men prance around, and that's culture. Or so they say. Oh, Lord. Yeah. Everything going okay with you? I know we've had some trouble in our families the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I had a little deal with my family. Well, not really my family, just a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's cool. Yeah, all kinds of bad things going on.
I will say that the next time I hear somebody, like, knock the board, I might get mad.
Yeah, Brian mentioned the same thing the other night. And I couldn't agree with
that. Craig, why don't you introduce our guest?
Sure thing. Our guest this evening wrestles in my neck of the woods and is on the current roster of DOA in Portland and also wrestles for Tulalip Championship Wrestling. We're having him on tonight to talk about the tournament that he did for Johnny Mantell down in Texas. And he did very well. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Cleaver. Doc, are you there?
Yes, sir. I am here.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing real good. Doing real good. Getting ready for Tulalip tomorrow and the St. John's Day Parade tomorrow and DOA on Sunday.
St. John's Day Parade. What's that all about?
Well, there's an area in town, it's called St. John's, and I believe tomorrow is St. John's Day, you know, on the Catholic calendar, so they're having a big parade. We're going to have a DOA float, we're going to walk around with our belts and stuff and promote DOA wrestling.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool. Well, tell us a little bit how you got started before we get into the tournament.
Okay, well, you know, I've always wanted to do something athletic. I was an athlete all through high school and in college and all that, and I did Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all that stuff. And I always wanted to do some sort of performing athletics kind of a thing. You know, I tried to be a musician for a while. That didn't really work out for me very well. I wasn't very good at it. And I spent a lot of time trying to find a trainer. I went all over town. I tried to go to the Grappler School that was about to close. I tried to go to Buddy Rose's school. I could never find him. And I got real lucky. Sandy Barr moved to Flea Mart right next to the Montage where I work. And he came by all the time and was watching me cook and stuff. I was like, hey, who's this weird Fred Flintstone-looking guy? Found out it was Sandy Barr, and I just bugged him and bugged him and bugged him until he finally let me train with him.
Did you actually get to wrestle in the flea market?
Yeah, we did some shows. We did a few shows in the parking lot of the flea market. And we did a lot of training sessions in the flea market. But we didn't have room to put the ring up, so we just had to do them on amateur mats. That's how I first started training.
Yeah, I actually worked for Sandy years ago, and we were actually in the market. And
up on Chautauqua or whatever?
Yeah. It was interesting, to say the least, the characters running around that place.
Oh, yeah, always.
So, Dr. Cleaver, if I may call you.
Absolutely.
Doc comes to the ring, and I haven't seen you work in quite a while, so please forgive me. He used to come to the ring in scrubs. A little bit of blood on the scrubs. Did you or did you not have a cleaver?
I never really. I mean, I've got a bunch of cleavers at home, but I've never brought them to the ring because they're all really sharp and really dangerous.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't really want to actually cut somebody's head off, you know.
Right. And so, how long have you been doing this?
About 8 years.
About 8 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And how'd you get hooked up with Caden Matthews?
I worked with Caden Matthews. Caden Matthews worked a couple shows for Sandy, and I worked with him in NRW, and he just, once he opened up his own promotion, he just gave me a call and wanted me to come up.
Cool. And you're working for him tomorrow night in at the Rim, correct?
Yeah, at the Pacific Rim Ballroom. It's a great venue.
Okay.
Really good venue. They
yeah,
have
it is.
Food
it
there,
is.
And they have
very...
drinks there and everything, and the crowd's really easy to work.
Now, I've heard that the crowd numbers have actually gone up since Brian Alvarez retired. Is that true?
I couldn't say. I can say the last few shows I've been up there, the crowd numbers have definitely been up.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess we
know. It has,
I guess we,
it has
we
nothing
know
to do with the food.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the food there, that's for sure. Do you have a menu item named after you at the Pacific Rim?
I have. They had the Dr. Cleaver prime rib special, and I was really happy to be top billing on the menu.
Awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, did you get to work with Lance when he came in here last year?
Oh, Lance Storm. I went to his
seminar,
and it was a really good seminar. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot.
Yeah, Lance is a regular guest on our show, and he's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
So, getting into the meat of, if you will, pardon the pun, the meat of our discussion this evening, you went down to work Johnny Mantell's tournament in Texas. Tell us a little bit about how you got hooked up with that.
Well, my friend Jim Anderson, who was one of Sandy's best friends back then, he was always there when I was training, he told me to go. Yeah, he's friends with Johnny. He'd been talking to Johnny on the phone and everything, and he told me to go, so I basically couldn't refuse. I had to go. And anytime Jim Anderson tells you to do something, you pretty much got to do it. So me and Exile went down there. It was a good time.
Now, we had Johnny on the show, and he had, like, some, his original plans, he wanted to have, I believe, like, over 400 wrestlers. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was only 44, or could you tell us the number that was in?
Yeah, it was close to 50. I think it might have been a little bit above 50, like maybe 54 or so. But yeah, it was originally supposed to be 400, and then there was about 100 people that actually signed up, but then there was only around 50 who actually showed up and paid the money and did all that stuff to do it.
And the money was like $250 to go down, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah. That was the entrance fee.
Okay. And did he deliver on all the coaches that he said were going to be there?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, Booker T wasn't there, but I wasn't really expecting him to be there. But yeah, Mondo Guerrero was there, and Chavo Guerrero was there, and Harley Race was there, and Jake the Snake was there, Tugboat Taylor was there, Stan the Lariat Hansen was there. There's a lot of legends
cool.
out there.
Cool.
The guys from Japan were there.
So how do you feel there's a lot of skeptics that on the internet, people were like heard it, and people were even saying that it was kind of a scam in a way, which I don't see how they could even think that. But just your overall opinion of the whole tournament, I know they didn't have the number they wanted to, but would you call it a success, or what are your thoughts just on the whole thing altogether?
I would definitely say it was a success, and I would definitely say it was worth my time and worth my money. You know, it wasn't everything it was cracked up to be, of course. You know, nothing ever is. But I made a lot of really good contacts. I got a lot of really good potential bookings, and I got a lot of really good advice from some of the trainers there. So it was definitely worth my time. It was a good experience. And I always appreciate any time I get to work new people. And I didn't get to work a single guy that I had worked before. So it was wonderful for me. I thought it was worth it.
Now, how did they set up the bracketing and the matches? How many matches did you have, and how do you feel they went over?
The first day was just general matches by weight class, and that was just to get through the first round. Then the second day, we started actually narrowing people down into the, you know, to set up for the third day. The third day was the final 32, and then we narrowed it down to 16 and all that, you know. It was a really good experience. I'll tell you, you know, my first match I was a little disappointed with. I had to work Will Hitch. He's about 60 years old. He hasn't been in the ring in about 5 years. He wanted to take a nap in the middle of the match. And I didn't get the score I wanted to get because of that, I feel. We both got the same score. I really felt like I should have gotten a little bit higher since I had to carry the guy through the entire thing.
Now, they were talking that you wouldn't advance for because of wins or losses or anything like that. You were going to advance on work. You obviously made it deep in the rounds. Like the first guy you worked, did he end up working again that weekend, or how did that
yeah,
go?
Yeah, he ended up working on Saturday, but then on Sunday, once they narrowed it down to the final 32, he was done. But yeah, it was all done by scores and what the judges thought of your performance and all that kind of stuff. Like I kept telling Exile on the last day, he made it a little bit further in the tournament than me. I kept telling him, don't do anything you're not absolutely 100% sure that you're going to do perfect. Do everything perfect, keep it simple, and make it perfect, and they will appreciate what you're doing. If you make one mistake, you're going to get dinged for it.
I don't know how to ask this, so I'm just going to ask it. You and Exile have good bodies. Were there any guys there that just had the money and that's how they got in the tournament? You know what I'm saying?
I would say there were some guys that had the connections and the money and all that, and yeah, you know, there was a couple guys that were wearing jeans out to the ring and stuff like that. You know, there were some guys that were not quite on par with the rest of them. There were also a couple guys that had great bodies but were green as hell. You know,
right?
There's all kinds. Whenever you go to any wrestling show, there's always going to be all sorts of different folks.
Very true.
Yeah.
One
of the concerns that some people might have brought up before would have been like somebody who, since it was, you know, they're only picking not the winner of the match, but who they judge on points. There was some concern that some guys might try and sabotage other guys, try and make them not look good. You talked about how you weren't happy with your first round opponent. Was there any instances where somebody kind of was really trying to be I guess just be a dick and make someone look bad, or did everyone professional and doing the best they could do?
I didn't really see that in my own personal experience. Everybody that I got to work, you know, we both put each other over and we both tried to make everybody look good. I don't know that necessarily happened, but it could have. But I didn't see it go down.
I think there were some
guys that just weren't good enough to be there. That's not really their fault.
Well, I think they'd be dumb to even try that, with, since, you know, it's legends. You know, the legends would be able to catch on to that, so, yeah. But
you would think that.
Yeah, speaking of the legends, what kind of advice did they give you, and what kind of critiques did you get from some of the guys?
I got a lot of really good critiques from Mondo Guerrero. I just want to say that Mondo Guerrero is the man. After every single match I had, he came back and told me, you know, you did this great, you're a great performer, you have really good personality, this, but you need to work on this, you know, your European uppercut you did didn't look quite as good as it could have, you know, snap that in there. I got a lot of really good advice from Mondo. He's the man. He's definitely the man.
Very cool. Now, Exile did very well in this tournament, as I saw some of your posts. Exile, by the way, should have been brought into TNA as Hernandez's little brother.
you know, he got that about 15 times that weekend. He got sick of it.
He's got a great look, and I actually did see him on the TNA house show. He was, I can't believe it, they had him being a ring boy at the TNA house show here in Kent. But he did very well. How did both of you guys do?
I made it through the final 32. I got eliminated in that round by 1 point. My opponent got one. I won the match, but my opponent got one more point than me. I think I got dinged because I did something that wasn't perfect. And Exile made it down to the final eight, the elite eight, if you will.
Now, where was the guy who was the guy that won, or where was he from, and should we look for him?
His name was Tim Storm. He was a somewhat local. I think he lived in Dallas or something. He was a Texas guy, and yeah, he's pretty incredible. He was everything he did was perfect, and that's what I kept telling everyone. he didn't do a lot. Everything he did was real simple, but everything he did was real perfect. And yeah, he's got a great look, and you know, apparently he's a school teacher, which is weird, but yeah.
Well, we don't want any more school teachers in professional wrestling, as Matt Stryker has showed us. So.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, a guy that I watched when I was a lot younger was in the tournament. Did you get to see Chaz work?
Oh, Chaz Taylor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to see him work a lot. He's pretty incredible. He's pretty. He did a really cool gimmick in his last match too. I seen him go out there. He'd been sick all weekend. I don't know what he was trying to do. But he was drinking a lot of water right before his match. Like, what are you going to do? You're just going to throw up again. He went out there, and the Tokyo Monster hit him in the gut a couple of times, and he just started throwing up.
It was brutal.
It was absolutely. I knew he was a veteran at that point because he had at least the presence to take himself to the corner and hang his head outside the ring.
I saw Matt Farmer do that in the ring one time when I was working with him, and he did not get his head outside the ring, unfortunately. And guys were bumping in his puke the rest of the evening. But anyway.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Now, right after the tournament, I believe I might have saw a Facebook post from the airport saying something happened that made the whole trip worthwhile. What was that about?
I was sitting there. Exile's flight was at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and my flight wasn't until 7 o'clock. And he had to take the rental car back, so just sitting there at the airport with 4 hours to kill, and in walks Johnny Mantell and Mondo Guerrero. So I got to visit with them for a while. Johnny just dropped Mondo off. We hung out for a little while, and he told me some really great stories. And then me and Mondo were on the same flight to Denver, so we went to the airport bar. I bought him some beers. He told me everything I needed to know. He told me everything. He told me, you know, do this, do that, put your DVD out there, you know, send it out to everyone. Act like you're a dog after a bone and don't take no for an answer. And he gave me his number.
Wow.
So it was that was worth it. That made everything all worth it.
Very cool.
That's cool, man.
Well, it didn't sound like they got their number there at the tournament, but sounds like everything went well. And if he does this again, on your advice, you're saying definitely sign up, go back. Is that what I'm getting from you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it wasn't everything that was cracked up to be, you know, but it was worth every penny, and it was worth my time, and it was a great experience. And, yeah, when I can, I'm going to go back for sure.
To me, it sounds like the ultimate workshop.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's like a three-day clinic, basically.
Well, very cool. It's nice to have you on tonight. If you're in the Portland area, you can check Dr. Cleaver out. He's going to be working for DOA, the Battle of the Belts, this Sunday?
This Sunday.
This
tomorrow.
Sunday. And TCW tomorrow night in Marysville. And you'll also be working for DOA in Eugene on Sunday, May 22nd. Dr.
Absolutely.
Cleaver, it was nice talking to you. Thank you so much for the report from Texas, and appreciate your time.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, have a good one.
Appreciate it.
Later, thanks.
Cool. Well, that went pretty well. Since we have like a whole lot of tournaments to talk about,
right?
I wanted to ask what shape Jake Roberts was in.
Oh, was he there?
Didn't he say he was there?
He did mention Jake. He probably was just being Jake. Who knows?
Probably got paid in Craig.
I'll go ahead and let Craig pick the first tournament he wants to talk about here. So.
Oh, shit. I don't have my email open. Well, let's get it out of the way. The very first King of the Ring.
Okay, yeah. Well, let me scroll down here because this is a very big email here.
Yes,
the very first
King
of the Ring, would that be the 1993, or was there any before?
Yeah, that was June 13th, 1993, that Bret Hart won. Probably the best King of the Ring tournament that they ever had, I believe, in my opinion.
Yeah, Yeah, and this one, like most of them, they were set up throughout the different TV shows for like some of the prelim matches. And do any of the prelim matches really stick out to you as far as the very first one?
No, because I don't think I ever saw any prelim matches.
Well,
I mean,
you beat
a Kamala
via
count out. That looked like a 5-star match right there. Tatanka and John Gonzalez. Ooh. Lex Luger and Bob Backlund.
That probably was good. Bob. It was probably out Bob, but it was probably pretty good.
Now, as I'm looking at this, this went for a while. It went over a month. 3 months.
Yeah, with the qualifying matches.
Oh, okay. And
April the 6th, it says, well, it was taped on April the 6th, but it started like in the first week of airing in the first week of May, so.
Okay. And was there anything on the line? I can't even remember this tournament, to be honest with you.
No, it was just to be the first King of the Ring, but they did have Shawn Michaels was in it as the Intercontinental Champion, and he ended up getting eliminated in a double count out with Crush, which kind of sounds absurd today, but I guess that's how they got him out of the tournament without him having to actually job later on. But I just remember Bret Hart put on, as far as the pay-per-view, put on just like an incredible performance, because it was just one awesome match after another one. I mean, he had that first awesome match with Razor Ramon, and then he had that fucking incredible match with Mr. Perfect, and that was one of Perfect's last matches for a while, or pretty close to it. And then he had another really, really good one with Bam Bam Bigelow, so it was like the Bret Hart show.
I like the false finish they did where Luna hit Bret with the chair, and then Bam Bam got the win. And then instead of reversing the decision, they just had the match continue. I thought that was a pretty good finish.
Now, did this lead? Lawler ended up interrupting Hart's coronation ceremony or whatever. Did this lead to the SummerSlam where they were supposed to have Jerry Lawler's Knights against Bret Hart's
foundation
or whatever?
That was Survivor Series.
My bad.
And that's where Jerry had like some court problems. And had to pull out of it. And they put Shawn Michaels and who was it? Shawn Michaels, Barry Horowitz, Jeff Gaylord, and
Greg Valentine.
Who was the other
guy? Maybe Greg Valentine.
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been one of them.
Terry Funk was supposed to be one, but he showed up and found out he was supposed to do a job, and he went home.
But the best match.
Lawler wasn't there because he was indicted for raping a 15-year-old girl.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right.
Oops.
Was it the cat? Was it the cat or was it somebody else?
I would think it's not the cat since they end up married.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it was just one of those things that got blown out of proportion. I don't think there was anything to it. That's why.
Who knows? I mean, he's gotten all kinds of problems, but he's never, ever been convicted. But the perfect match, that was fucking awesome. I mean, that was fantastic. Who could tell Mr. Perfect had to fucking retire for a few years with a back injury?
This show also had Hogan's last WWF match on it. He lost to Yokozuna.
I'll be darned.
Remember when the flashbulb supposedly exploded in his face from the Japanese photographer?
Yeah, when they had that old-fashioned fucking thing on, that was actually pretty funny. But since we're talking King of the Rings, we'll just go ahead and move up to probably one of the most important King of the Rings, because by accident, the fucking biggest selling t-shirt of all time basically came about because of this King of the Ring, and that's the one where Stone Cold won the King of the Ring by beating Jake Roberts in the finals, and where he uttered the famous words of Austin 3:16 for the first time, which led to dozens of Austin 3:16 signs in the stands the next day on Raw, and then within weeks, the black t-shirt was everywhere.
Yeah, he ended up beating Jake the Snake Roberts in the finals, and for whatever reason, Jake was coming off the stuff, I'll leave it at that, and had found the Lord and was on the TNN network, and or the TVN network, excuse me. And, yeah, and he basically said, you thump your Bible and preach this John 3:16, and then he uttered the famous lines, Austin 3:16 said, I just kicked your ass.
And originally this was going to be Triple H's King of the Ring win.
That's
right. He got
right.
in trouble from
and
the curtain call a couple of, about a month earlier.
The curtain call did him in, and he was the only one punished.
And he was punished by jogging out to Jake Roberts' scene with the DDT.
And
also,
the Ultimate Warriors,
I remember. I'm looking at this qualifying round, and Owen Hart pinned Yokozuna by using the ropes for leverage. That just sounds absurd. Doesn't it?
He would have needed, like, the front row and most of the second row as well for leverage.
Jeez.
That's funny, but the Ultimate
You ever seen the spot that they do in ROH every so often where they do the big chain of cheating where the one guy will have the guy at an abdominal stretch and they'll reach back and grab his tag partner, and they only do it in like an 8-man tag, and then like the other guy will grab a hold of his hand and the other guy will grab a hold of his hand, and then the next thing you know, they're out on the floor and they're hooking hands with the fans in the front row, and it's just big long chain of cheating that goes throughout. I love it. It's the greatest spot ever.
Do you guys ever notice, like, from watching like WWF in like the 80s or 90s, nobody could ever do an abdominal stretch good enough for Gorilla Monsoon?
Well, nobody ever hooked a leg. That's why.
I know.
If they would have hooked a leg, it would have put more pressure on whatever the body part, you know, the gorilla, he knew all the body parts, and he could tell you where the exact pressure was going, but they never hooked the leg.
Yeah. You couldn't do that abdominal stretch good enough for gorilla, I guess. I don't know.
By the way, did you know in this tournament, Steve Austin ended up with 16 stitches in his face by the end of the night?
He had to go to the emergency room after his first match.
With Mark Marrow, and get 16 stitches put in his upper lip, and how Jake the Snake slipped past Vader, I will never understand, especially in 3 minutes and 34 seconds. And then you went into the finals with Steve Austin and his 16 stitches against Jake the Snake Roberts.
Now, how did he get busted open? Was it just, what exactly caused
I don't know what caused him to get busted open.
I'm not 100% either.
Is it something that happened in the match?
Yeah, something in the Marrow match. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he had to go to the hospital right after his match. He gets stitched up and then come back for the finals.
Imagine if something would have happened, like traffic, and he wouldn't have got back in time. How everything would have been changed just by that.
Don't even think about it.
I don't know. He just had to be a bitch. I got to go to the hospital and get my lips stitched up, and then I have to go back so I can be in another match. Jesus.
Yeah, that's almost as bad as Dr. Death. But we'll go ahead and move along to probably what everybody probably wants us to talk about. And in fact, this tournament is such a famous tournament that the biggest topic of discussion at Brian Alvarez's wedding was not what the bride was wearing. It's not how short Brian was. It's not how Craig was about to bust out of his tuxedo. The big topic of that wedding was the Crockett Cup. So let's talk of some Crockett Cups here.
Oh, well, that's a show.
Really?
The first one? Yep.
And what year was it?
12 years old.
And
went
what
to
year?
To
long... The what?
Did you go to both of them or just one of them?
Oh, I went to the matinee and the evening session.
Oh, okay, cool. Now they had
like an 8-hour day right there. This was like an 8-hour wrestling show.
Yeah, what was different about this show is they really did bring in a lot of people from different territories. I mean, they had Bobby Jaggers and Mike Miller, who I'm guessing were representing Portland at the time. You had the you know, the Batten Twins. You had Nelson Royal and Sam Houston. You had Terry Taylor and Steve Williams from Mid-South. You had Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell. And were they from Mid-Southern at the time?
Memphis.
The Sheepherders. You had the Guerreros. You had the Fantastics. You had the Fabulous Ones. You had Bud Sawyer and Rick Steiner. And
yeah,
I didn't know Coco B. Ware and the Italian Stallion. I didn't know they were actually in that one. And another weird one is Black Bart and Jimmy Garvin. And they took on Brett Wayne Sawyer and DJ Patterson. And then, let's see, I guess that's the majority of the...
Giant Bob and Tiger Mask?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. They had Tiger Mask, which was... it wasn't the original, it was...
Misawa?
What's his name? What was the second one, the one that died?
Misawa?
I can't think of his name.
Misawa.
Misawa.
This is the first time I ever got to see Giant Baba. He's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I got some Bruiser Brody tapes with matches with Baba, and yeah, he is absolutely horrible. But they actually got the second biggest push. Let's see, they had the Midnight Express were also in it. You also had Magnum TA and Ron Garvin. And I think Rick Martel and Dino Bravo were supposed to be in it representing Canada, but for some reason they weren't there. I have no
Rick
idea
Martel
why.
Was there. I think Dino Bravo had his appendix burst or something.
Oof.
Maybe while they were in New Orleans for this. And so, or maybe he just didn't even show up. Maybe that was just a story. I don't know. But Rick Martel was there because I remember him shaking hands with Steve Williams and Terry Taylor because they had to forfeit the match. So.
Mm. I remember this one. This was I used to work for this guy, and he, you know, he made quite a bit of money, so he would always and forever, they would offer up a new VHS tape on, you know, TBS, and he would immediately buy it. And this was the one. It came in the huge clamshell, you know, and just VHS, great big huge thing, and he bought this commercial tape of the Crockett Cup 86. And I remember just being in awe because they had a bunch of people that I'd never heard of. And then when I remember the stuff I saw on the commercial tape, and then I see the rundown of all the teams, that commercial tape didn't touch the teams that were in this match. There was hundreds of teams.
If it was today, like with DVDs and stuff, it'd be like a 4-disc release with every match in its entirety on there or something, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking at this list, and I am floored. Some of these names and
some of the matches.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm looking at matches like the Fantastic against the Fabulous Ones. That's like a dream match right there.
Oh, jeez. I don't remember that on the tape.
The Fantastic against beating Arn Anderson and Telly Blanchard. That was an upset at the time.
Yeah.
And you had Ivan and Nikita Koloff beating Couture's favorite Jimmy Valiant and Manny Fernandez. You had the Road Warriors. The Road Warriors in it. We forgot to mention them. They defeated Joaquin McDaniel and Mark Youngblood. And I'm sure that was a good match. You had Megan T.A. and Ron Garvin beating Bud Sawyer and Rick Steiner.
That was one of Rick Steiner, maybe his first year in the first 2 years in the business was this match. It was a pretty good match. They had a match here that Dave Meltzer gave 5 stars to Sheepherders and the Fantastics going to a double disqualification. You'd never get a 5-star rating out of anything like that today.
Especially a double disqualification. But they showed that in that, Sean. They showed that on like
that
one
was
of the Saturday nights.
I thought. Even though it was double disqualification.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Those two teams, they worked pretty good together. They never got the, you know, the fame like, you know, I'm saying this is Rock and Roll's late night feud, but the Fantastics and the Sheepherders, they tore it up in Mid-South. I mean,
yeah.
They had some awesome matches. Everyone thinks this stuff, the Bushwhackers are just jokes. You know, because they were doing the little, whatever the gimmick was in the WWF, but the Sheepherders could fucking go. They were badass.
They were hardcore before hardcore was cool.
I remember seeing the first time I ever saw a barbed wire cage match.
Yeah.
With them and Fantastics and Terry Taylor against the Sheep Herders and Jack Victory.
That thing was so flimsy, but, you know, they it's not like they threw each other into the thing, you know. I mean, it was very minimal, the interaction with the actual barbed wire. But, I mean, at the time, it was, you know, something to see, you know, people.
Yeah, they weren't doing fucking moonsaults off the fucking thing, like Kurt Angle.
But
yeah, I remember getting the After Mags and seeing the Sheep Herders and the Fantastics barbed wire matches in there and just going, what is this? And not understanding because I'd never seen them, you know, because it was all from back east and I never got to see any of that stuff.
But
Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes in a world title match, they did the Dusty finished the same finish that they did in like every Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes match. They reversed the disqualification.
And he was bleeding.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were both bleeding. But this one, I would have really liked to have seen like the quarterfinal. I mean, like besides the Fantastic Sheepherders, you also had Magnum T.A. and Ronnie Garvin beating Giant Bomba and Tiger Mask. And I remember them showing the clips of it was Tiger Mask coming off with like a body press and getting into the belly to belly by Magnum. And I remember the clip they showed. That looked pretty awesome. And then the finals was the Road Warriors beating Magnum T.A. and Ron Garvin. And I think Garvin had like a hurt hand and his like big move was a knockout punch and he's like, hit on one of the Road Warriors, but his hand was hurt, so it kind of caused them to, I forgot what happened, but he ended up getting,
he nailed Hawk with the hand and knocked Hawk out, and, but his hand was hurt so bad he couldn't capitalize, and Hawk was able to, like, make the tag or something like that, and Animal just came in and clotheslined Garvin and pinned him. Yeah, the Horseman had broken his hand or something on TV.
Yeah, I remember that for a while. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen that tournament. I mean, it was pretty awesome. And then they followed it up the next year with another one. And this one they brought in people from other areas, but not as many. And there were some teams that they're actually even jobbers in this one. I mean, there's probably actually quite a few if you really look at it. Like the Mob Squad was in there, and somehow they upset Wahoo McDaniel and Baron Von Roschke, which is a surprise. You had Downtown Denny Brown, the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion, and Chris Champion, beating, oh my God, everybody's favorite, Bill and Randy Mokey.
You know, it was so stupid. They didn't get at least a, especially when they were facing these guys, they didn't get a win to the next round, especially coming off that big win over the Gladiators on TV.
Yeah, you know, they,
I bet they were over than most of these teams in the tournament, aside from like the Road Warriors and Dusty and Nikita.
Yeah, I mean, it was because, you know what's funny is because like for like 2 or 3 weeks they pushed the Galaxians. Or what was it, the Galaxians?
Gladiators.
The Gladiators. They talked about the Gladiators coming in for fucking weeks.
Yeah.
And then they're running wild on the Loki brothers like you would expect them to, just kicking their ass. And then one of the guys got him up with a body slam, and he trips over the other Loki schoolboy, and the Lokis win the match. And, I mean, if you talk about a surprise in wrestling, there's very few that top this, because who would have thought that the Lokis, who never got one offensive move I ever saw, you know, they had two of the worst, you know, pale bodies I ever seen. I mean, whoever thought they would have won, and they were over after that. I mean, and then they had them lose in the first round.
They looked like a couple of out of shape Sheamuses. They were so pale. And then you never saw the bigger excitement in David Crockett's voice when they won that match. My God.
I know, dude. That was so awesome. I wish I had. Is that on YouTube? Someone put a link to this on YouTube.
It probably is. It's probably on YouTube somewhere.
You know, those two guys could work circles around probably half the roster of WWE and TNA. Those guys were good. Those guys, the jobbers back in those days were good. So good.
I mean,
and
just like those guys, jobbers. Like Denny Brown or George South or guys like that, they were awesome.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. You know, I mentioned there were jobbers, but then actually, you know, in reality, they were actually good. Like the new Browns, the next team, Steve Kern and George South against Mike Graham and Nelson Royal. You know, George South and Nelson Royal were fucking awesome. You know, they also had one of the church favorites, Chester Watley, and I forgot something Khan.
T.J. Khan.
Yes, T.J. Khan. And they defeated Couture's number one favorite wrestler, Jimmy Valiant, and Lasertron. And how did they beat Lasertron? Jesus Christ, which was that?
Lasertron's from space, and they didn't know the rules. And he backdropped him over the top rope. Where to God.
Oh, you think Hector Guerrero would be smarter than that, you know? But I guess not.
It wasn't Hector Guerrero, it's Lasertron. He's from outer space. Well, Christ, the new breed came from, like, 2012, where Dusty Rhodes was the president of the United States.
It's too bad they were never in none of the Crockett Cubs, man. That team, that's one of the greatest short-lived teams ever, dude. But you also had Ron and Jimmy Garvin were teaming up. I guess Jimmy had gone face by this time. And they defeated Ricky Lee Jones and the Italian Stallion, and I don't even remember Ricky Lee Jones.
That's Hoot Gibson, Robert Gibson's brother.
Oh, really?
Ricky Gibson.
Oh, really? Okay, then.
Yeah.
Then I know who that is. Then okay.
Italian Stallion. He's another guy that was an enhancement guy that was awesome. I thought.
He was also the spaghetti eating world champion of the world.
Yeah, that's right. He trained the Hardys that night.
Trained the Hardys.
Yeah, I believe so. Or either got their job matches in WWF or something like that.
Hmm.
And then they tried taking all their money, so they just...
They were going to blow it on draft anyway.
Him and George South have wrestled with each other like a billion times in little independents all over the South. I just always remember seeing them, their names against each other. But then he also had another jobber tag team. I don't understand the name. Okay, you have Thunderfoot 1 and 2. Why weren't they?
Well, he was Thunderfoot because he had his main move was like kicking you in the face with a big boot.
But there were two of them. They're feet, not foot. It should be the Thunder feet.
Okay.
Someone,
Rocky King and Bobby Jaggers. That sounds like a odd pairing.
Rocky King, dude, was one of my favorite jobbers of all time. He was fucking awesome, dude. Speaking
Little Richard
awesome
Marley.
Jobbers. Little Richard Marley, or who else did he do? Did he do anybody else? But anyway, he was an awesome babyface in Pearl, but he was always in Pearl.
Yeah.
Bobby Jaggers, he's one of the, I grew up watching Bobby Jaggers in San Antonio, and I just remember, if you want to know why the WWE took over the wrestling world, it's because this asshole had an angle with Scott Casey where Scott Casey poured pink shit all over him, and that got Southwest kicked off the USA Network, and the WWE took over and now runs the world.
Interesting. And thank you, Haphazard. You have put up the video on our page in Brian's forum, The Gladiators versus the Mulkey Brothers. You're a fine, fine man. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to watch that as soon as the show's over.
I might watch it now.
You had a weird combination of Bill Dundee and the Barbarian against
Bill
Warner
Dundee
and Mike.
The Barbarian at that time.
Oh, okay. Okay. And they beat Tim Horner and Mike Rotundo, which that's another job that was awesome. Tim Horner, you know, he was always awesome. And Mike Rotundo, back then, he was really one of the top workers in North America at the time. I mean, he was really a really great worker back then.
Yeah, I liked him when he turned heel with the Varsity Club the next year. I really liked him at that point.
Yeah, he was really good at that point. And then you also had, like, Bob and Brad Armstrong. And this is
those
about...
Those guys are great.
Yeah. And when I first started watching Georgia Wrestling, it was around the time where it's like every Thanksgiving or around Thanksgiving they would do a tournament for maybe like the U.S. titles. And I remember like the first couple years it was Bob and Brad would win it every year. And, yeah, they were awesome.
Of course they were.
And This is actually when they would actually win matches, you know, before they went on that 10-year losing streak. And they beat Ivan Koloff and Vladimir Petrov, one of like a billion generic Russians at the time.
There was like four or six Russians at that time, wasn't there? There was Ivan, Nikita, and then they had an illegitimate cousin with a googly eye. There was like a half dozen of them at one time running around.
Taldov Ustinov, Bam Bam Bigelow was a Russian for a little while.
Dukov.
Boris.
Yeah, but
the biggest head in the world.
And then you also had the team of Tully Blanchard and Lex Luger, I guess, and they were the four horsemen. And then you had Giant Baba came back again, but this time he came with, I don't even want to try the name. Go ahead, Couture.
Takagi.
I never heard of him, and I don't remember him, so. He wasn't as good as Misawa, that's for sure.
You don't say.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think of what would be the best match from this card. You know, I mean, I'm sure.
Well, if you're talking non-tournament matches, you Barry Windham and Ric Flair.
Oh yeah, that was an awesome match.
They had the first night in the first day in Baltimore. They had Ole Anderson and Big Bubba in a cage match.
I'm sure that was pretty good. But this one came down to Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff. So this is right after Nikita Koloff decided to go face after Magnum had got hurt earlier in the year. And basically, you could tell that this was a Crockett promotion tournament because it came down to Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff, Crockett guys going against Tully Blanchard and Lex Luger from the Four Horsemen. So.
Mm-hmm. And this was the first time anybody had really seen Magnum walk. He was able to walk again, and he walked down to the ring
with a cane. That's
a pretty cool deal.
Very emotional, because I remember them showing, you know, pictures of the car, and I was concerned as a young lad. And it was pretty cool to see him actually up and about, because like the way that car looked, you would have thought nobody survived.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of asked if you remember this, Couture. Okay, they, you know, he came and he was fucked up. Well, obviously, he still walked, but he was fucked up at this time. Now, not that much longer, maybe it was a year or two, but not too much longer, they showed videos of Magnum running and, like, working out, and it looked like
were videos
fine.
From, like, 1985 that they're rerunning.
Okay, because I always thought for some reason I thought they were saying that he was making a comeback, and that was like the video to show that he was making a comeback. But then the next time I saw him, he was all fucked up again. So, I guess that explains it. Because
running on the beach his mother or something like that.
Yeah, it was exactly that.
Well, okay. I think they were building up like at Starcade one year. He was gonna do like. Some kind of an interview, and they were just kind of like remembering, you know, years ago when he was still able to wrestle, and they showed that old video from 1985. That's what that deal was.
Okay. And
so I've got to leave in like 7 minutes, and I just got to throw this out before I'm out of here. My favorite tournament, probably of all time, is the J Cup from 1994, put on by the War Promotion. And in the finals, you had Great Sasuke versus the Ultimo Dragon. And this was such an amazing tournament. You had Benoit. You had Guerrero under the Black Tiger mask. Sasuke, Ultimo Dragon, just tons and tons of amazing Japanese high flyers. And this is probably...
I'm sorry.
94.
He's talking about the one after Benoit won.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. My fault.
Yeah, but that one's
the
one
same
year?
Oh. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was 94. Now you're getting me to doubt myself.
Well, no, I'm just looking at 1994, and it just says, like, Benoit beat Sasuke in the finals. That's what I was asking.
Okay, check 95 then.
No, 95 is the one that did Wall 1.
95 is Liger beating Gato in the finals.
Okay, now I'm confused. maybe, okay, wait a second. Ultimo Guerrero, Ultimo Dragon and Sasuke were in a semifinal round. Correct?
Ultimo Dragon. Ultimo Dragon and Liger were.
Holy crap, now I got to go through my tapes and figure out which one this is. Cause,
okay,
Sasuke,
no, you know what? It's not the one after. It's not 95. It's after 95 because Liger won 95.
96, 97, anyway. It's the year Ultimo Dragon won the thing. And Sasuke legit cracked his skull doing the Swanton from the top to the floor. And he legit cracked his skull, and it was a phenomenal, phenomenal event. And now that I don't have the tournament in front of me, it pains me because now I can't remember which year it was.
Oh, one of these, it had a heck of a Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho match.
Mm-hmm.
I remember. I think he gave him a tombstone pile driver off the second rope as a finish or something like that. Wasn't one of these shows we had that awesome Psychosis and Ray Jr. match? They weren't in a tournament, but
yes.
It was just it was on the same
show.
Exhibition?
Exhibition match, and the fans were so respectful of the match that they were actually throwing money in the ring after the match was over.
Yeah, that was the match I watched on YouTube where I thought the thing didn't have any sound, but it's just nobody
right.
was making any noise.
Right, right. You know,
now
that I think about it might have been 97.
Is this also the one where they kind of unified all the belts? Because you remember
The war promotion brought all the juniors together from all over. So you had guys from New Japan, All Japan, just everywhere. Michinoku Pro just brought everybody in. And I think they did do a – gosh, where's Alan Farrell when you need him? I'm pretty
sure
they did.
I remember Dragon and WCW in 96 having 8 titles.
Yeah.
The J
Crown.
Yeah, that sounds about right. World Promotion is the one that unified all those. Lance did some work for War. We should talk to him about this.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can check out any of the J Cups, either the Super Juniors, the J Cup tournaments, or. Even the Skydiving J tournaments, I have some of those on tape with X-Pac in those matches and just some great stuff. And I used to love the juniors from Japan. I wish I could have kept up on them over the years. Alan Farrell, I'm talking to you. Send me some tapes. So, all of those are worth checking out.
So we'll have fun at your place.
Oh, I'm so excited! I can barely contain myself. I'd much rather talk wrestling with you guys for the rest of the evening, but that's not going to happen. So, if you guys cooked for me, I would totally stay here and chat. But I got to run next week.
Well,
come cook back.
For you think it's going to be a while before you get served? But
next week. I have booked on the show Michael Elgin from ROH, from the House of Truth, Michael Elgin, the ROH's new monster. So come back and check that out next week, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. All right, let's go ahead and jump back to the third Crockett Cup, because the Crockett Cup's getting more jobbers and more jobbers by the number.
Yeah.
All right, on this one we have... That's the opening round. We got the team of Kendo Windham, who was always thought was better than he was giving credit for. He was kind of skinny, but he had a couple years where he wasn't too bad.
He was right below Sam Houston.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much the same build, and That is, he didn't have, like, the fire that time. He didn't have. Yeah, he was pretty good. And but this is funny. Okay, opening round, yeah, Kendo Windham and the Italian Stallion defeating the Terminator, which I don't even know what Terminator this is, and the Green Machine. The Green Machine
did not appear.
Yeah, the Green Machine did not appear. Windham and the Stallion won by forfeit because the Green Machine. Who the fuck is the Green Machine?
I have no idea. I'm just thinking it's probably one of maybe a dozen jobbers from Crockett TV that just, you know, had a massive outfit. Now, the Terminator here, the Terminator was the brother of Animal and Johnny Ace.
Oh, okay. I still don't remember him.
You remember Rage and Fury, the Wrecking Crew in WCW?
Yeah.
He was one of those guys.
Oh, okay.
I remember, it was funny because I popped when I watched, like, the Hall of Fame on USA this year because when Animal's out there doing his speech, they flashed over, and there was the Terminator sitting right there. So it was awesome.
Oh.
I probably only wouldn't pick up on it, but
you're probably right. You probably are the only one who picked up on it. And then we have Dirty Dick Murdoch and Ivan Koloff, which actually sounds like one hell of a heel tag team. And they defeated Patrick's favorite, Jimmy Zion, and the Mighty Igor. Now, is this the famous Mighty Igor?
No, this is somebody's, whoever put this together from where I got it from, it's like, this is Mighty Wilbur.
Oh.
Remember Mighty Wilbur?
I remember the Mighty Wilbur.
He was like, he was doing like a hillbilly gimmick?
Yeah. I was going to say, man, the Mighty Igor, he must have been like really, really old if he was in this.
Paul Jones brought Mighty Wilbur in, but he didn't like it that Wilbur was so nice, and Wilbur always called Paul Jones Puddinhead.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. That's you. It was so, I can't believe he hated it. It was awesome. We also had the brothers were represented in this one, as we had Tiger Conway Jr., I'm guessing it's just a Tiger Conway, but I'm assuming it's Tiger Conway Jr.
Yeah, Tiger Conway Jr.
It wasn't too bad. I saw him a little bit here in San Antonio, and he's teaming with Chester Watley. And
the
they defeated the Jazz.
That was their team name, the Jazz.
Yeah, that's what they were called, the Jazz Tones. I remember that now. Okay. And they defeated Rocky King and Nelson Royal. And probably wasn't that bad of a match.
Probably.
And then let's see here. The next match, Chris Champion and Mark Starr, and they defeated the Twin Devils, who are Curtis Thompson and Gene Legion, and in red outfits is basically what it says. And Gene Legion, dude, are these the fucking Ding Dongs?
Maybe.
I think they might. Someone answered that on the thread. But the Twin Devils, I just don't remember the Twin Devils. They were the evil versions of the Ding Dongs.
Now, Chris Champion and Mark Starr were the second version of the New Breed when Sean Royal left, but this new Breed didn't. I don't even think they ever made it on TV, just this show. And Chris Champion and Mark Starr were actually brothers. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, I remember Mark Starr. He wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
After that, we have Couture's favorite tag team of all time. We got Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner, the Lightning Express, and they defeated Johnny Ace and John Savage, who substituted for some Japanese team who didn't make it. I'm not sure who John Savage is.
He was just he was just another jobber.
Just another jobber that's doing that. And then we have the next opening round match is the Sheep Herders with Rip Morgan and that Jack Victory. And they beat the Cruel Connection of Gary Royal and George South.
Boy, there's not a lot of star power in this first round, is it?
Yeah, not at all. And I didn't know George South was one of the Cruel Connection. That's a trip. And let's see, what else the next match is? Larry Zbyszko and Al Perez. That sounds like a weird tag team. And they defeated Ricky Santana and Joe Cruz. And we got Tito Santana's shitty cousin, and Joe Cruz was substituting for Shane Douglas, and I guess Joe Cruz is just another jobber.
Yeah.
And let's see, then we got Mike Rotundo and Rick Steiner, which part of the Varsity Club, with Kenneth Sullivan, an awesome tag team. And they defeated, this is probably the biggest match so far of the first round. They defeated Steve Williams and Ron Simmons.
Yeah, that was yeah, I actually got this show on those DVDs I told you about the other day. From
Really?
Yeah, I got all the pay-per-views and big shows like from 88 to 1989. I haven't checked them out yet, but looking forward to. Yeah, I got this show on there.
And then non-tournament match, you had Jimmy Garvin beating Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah,
and
this is
a
darkness death match. We both had hoods.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And this is where, then after the match, the Varsity Club jumped Jimmy Garvin, and they were tagging him. And then Ronnie Garvin, who was supposed to team with Sting in the tournament, comes in, and they take that spike and, like, drive it into his chest. And he's injured out of the tournament.
So they brought in Lex Luger to be Sting's partner.
Yeah, because Luger was supposed to be Barry Windham, but a few days earlier, Windham went with the Horsemen. So Luger and Sting were both out of partners, so they teamed them up.
Oh, that's right. And I just got a text from Stevie asking me if the show is an hour early. And he was asking me if we were doing a show earlier, and then he sent me another message saying, oh, I noticed that I saw the thing from Blog Talk on there. It's like, yeah, it was, the time was kind of on there, Stevie, it's not my fault, but yeah, we did start an hour earlier, so sorry about any miscommunication. And let's see here. Next matches were, I lost my place.
Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard defeated Kendall Windham and the Italian Stallion in the first match of the second round.
That's
decent match. Yeah.
And then he had, I guess
the
a lot of teams that got fired.
Do what?
I said, like, it seems like a few teams got buys because it says the Road Warriors beat Pezwalt and Tyre Connolly, and it says the Powers of Pain defeated champion. And Marsh, I don't remember seeing them in the first round.
Yeah, I think this was, like, the top 10 seeds maybe got buys into the second round.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what it was. So.
Okay. And then I'm sure one of the second round matches, probably the best one, is you had the Sheep Herders beating Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner. And I'm sure that was a really good match.
You know what's funny is the Sheep, I don't know how this happened, but they miscalculated all their teams, so the Sheep Herders had 2 second round matches.
That's right. That was kind of weird that happened.
That doesn't sound fair at all, does it? Because they had a heel match with the Midnight Express by beating Stan Lane in the last match of the second round, after they'd already won one match in the second round to advance to the next round.
Anyway, it came down to, what was the finals? The finals was Sting and Luger, and of course they beat, once again, it's like the top faces from Crockett taking on the top heels. I'm having a hard time doing the show because I'm getting 1,000 texts from Stevie J. Stevie just texted me after the show, okay? And but they also had a non-tournament match of what else? Oh, Nikita Koloff defeating Ric Flair. And believe it or not, this was a 30-minute match.
This is when Nikita Koloff had hair and he'd gotten off steroids. I didn't like him off steroids.
Yeah, he kind of looked smaller.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't Nikita. You know what I mean? He was almost like a different person. He wasn't
yeah,
like
the hair didn't. That didn't work for me. Now I'm a big Nikita Koloff fan, so.
He wasn't the Russian. He wasn't the Russian Road Warrior anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and move over to something totally different here.
Okay.
Let's talk about the famous King of the Deathmatch tournament.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've seen this tape, and it's pretty bloody, and there's actually some shitty matches in here, but they were all interesting because they all had different gimmicks. You know, some of them had like thumbtacks, some of them had like glass. Some of them had, you know, the finals had exploding barbed wire. I mean, everybody remembers the clips of the finals, but you had, let's see some of the people who were in here. You had Tiger Jet Singh, who probably is the worst wrestler who made the most money in the history of pro wrestling. I mean, the dude was horrible, but for some reason he drew a lot of money against the Sheik in Canada, and
yeah.
He was like Tony Inoki's main challenger, so he, you know, he pretty much lived off a reputation that, and he was also getting free money and stuff from the mafia. I remember Cactus Jack writing in this book about that.
And he had a son who's a shitty wrestler.
And yeah, and his son sucked as a wrestler as Tiger Ali Singh or something. I don't know, but he sucked.
Yeah, and then I think he sued WWF because somebody shit in his turban.
I also remember like they did. They did an angle with Kurt Angle like a year or two before he even debuted.
Yeah.
And he wrestled in the first match. He wrestled Mr. Genosaki, which is one of the main guys from FMW. One of the main heels from FMW, which is Japan's Crazy Blood promotion. And you had Terry Funk, of course, crazy motherfucker, and he fought Leatherface. And Leatherface had wrestled a little bit in Memphis. And if I'm not mistaken, it's Corporal Kirshner, ain't it?
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Yeah. I know there's also like a second Leatherface, but I'm pretty sure this is Corporal Kirshner. And he comes to the ring just like Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he'd have a chainsaw. And he was actually pretty scary looking. And then you had a couple of Japanese guys. Yeah, Naka. I'm not even going to try and say the name. Yeah, two Japanese dudes. Wait.
Shoji Nakamaki versus Hiroshi Ono, two guys I've never heard of.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they had a pretty bloody match. I think one of the guys got like, there was like a board of nails, and I think the board of nails got stuck in one of their arms. And I think one of them might be the Danger Guy or Danger Man or whatever. I'm not too sure. But he also had Cactus Jack against Terry Gordy. And I just remember they had like a big square with thumbtacks, and Cactus had his face in it, and Gordy kicked his face right into the thumbtacks. And
It's sad watching Gordy back at this time.
Yeah, I just remember reading Cactus's book, and he said that Terry Gordy just like freaked out when he found out about like the stipulations, and basically just asked Cactus to carry him through the match.
And it should tell you how far he's fallen that he's doing like an IWA King of the Deathmatch show when he was like so huge in like all Japan for all those years.
Yeah, yeah, that is pretty sad. He was also like doing global at the time and
yeah.
Stuff. And basically this tournament came down to the famous match with Cactus and Terry Funk, which was a barbed wire that barbed wire sprung up all around the ropes. And they were on ladders. They were falling off the top of ladders onto barbed wire. And there's even a thing where like Cactus like bounces off the wire, and you can just see part of his hair and skin stay in the barbed wire. I mean, it's just a sick fucking match. I mean,
is this the one that had the countdown to the explosion, and the explosion was like shitty as hell?
They didn't have no. This didn't. That's you're thinking of another match. This match had basically they had like sheets, plywood sheets. It had barbed wire on top, and on the bottom they had C4. And when you body slammed or suplex your guy onto the thumbtacks, they blew up the C4. And I just remember reading on Cactus's book where they take his Funk and it's Cactus and it's Leatherface, and they're gonna show him how the exploding thing works. And they blow it up, and Cactus is like, "What the fuck?" And Terry Funk starts to talk, and he's like, "Oh, thank God, Terry's going to save us." And he's going to tell him we can't do it. And then Terry Funk says, "You need to put more C4 in there to make it really look good." And Cactus is like, "Oh, fuck." And the rest is history. I mean, that match is a big part of the legend of Cactus Jack, you know.
You know, you think more about this tournament. This is, you got to be somebody fucked up to think up some of this shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in 1995, somebody gave me a tape of this. I probably watched it. But, like, in 2011, I really got no urge to watch something like this. So, you know.
And then we'll go ahead and stay in Japan, but we'll go a totally different direction, and we'll go with probably the greatest single tournament that I ever saw as far as pure wrestling, and that's the first ever J-Cup. I think it's the first ever. It's the 1994 one, and you had some great competitors in this one. You have the great Sasuke, you have El Samurai, Negro Costes, Riki Fuji, Hayabusa, who I think this is near the beginning of the Hayabusa character. You had Jushin Liger, you had Chris Benoit, you had Eddie Guerrero as Black Tiger, you had Takamichi Nuku, you got Otani, you had the Super Dolphin, you had Dean Malenko, and you had Gato. And I just remember this tournament, which is real cool, because it's, you know, heavily based wrestling and, you know, some high flying, not as much as you would actually think. But, I mean, it was just an awesome display of wrestling. And almost every match was very clean and decisive, except for the Dean Malenko Gato match, because it actually looked like Dean Malenko kicked out right after three, and it just always kind of found, I just found it weird why that match was so close to look like that, while every other one, it was very decisive that the guy got laid out and got pinned for three. And they had some great matches, like I know at the very end, like, they gave Eddie Guerrero like this big trophy, and it had probably was for like, he really had some awesome matches. He beat Taka in just an awesome, awesome fucking match. I mean, it was fantastic. And then when he fought Benoit, it was a really, really good match. And there's a spot on the match where he goes to jump up on the top rope, and he almost wipes out, but Benoit saves him. But he does it in a way that it doesn't really look like he's, you know, saving him. But, you know, you could tell he saved them from wiping out. And it was just an incredible, incredible fucking match. And on the other bracket, Sasuke had some good matches with Samurai. And then he fought a Liger. And Samurai, it looked like Samurai and Liger were, like, just beating the fuck out of him, man. It looked like they were just stretching the fuck out of him, kicking his fucking ass. And I'll never forget the ending of this, of the Liger Sasuke match, because it's one of those matches where they fucked up, but they made it fucking better, because Liger's in the ring and Sasuke's out of the ring, and Sasuke jumps to the top rope and he's going to do like a springboard, but he just fucking fucks up and just fucks his fucking ass, dude, right in the ring. And Liger, without missing a beat, just turns his head to the side and throws his arm up in the air, and he's like, ah, kind of like making it look like, look at this fucking idiot.
Didn't he start clapping?
Like, yeah, I think he might have clapped once or twice, and he was really like, look at this fucking idiot. Just, you know, real cocky, and then he goes to pick him up, and Sasuke just, boom, hits, I believe it was a hurt karate, and pins him out of nowhere. And it just made the match even better. The fuck up made it better, because Liger was just so awesome at, you know, just being a dick about it, you know, because he was like beating the shit out of him and beating him. He was beating him like a bitch throughout the match. I mean, it was really looked like he was like stiffing him and stretching him. I mean, he might not have. I mean, it's just how it looked. But, you know, and then Sasuke and Benoit had a fantastic match. And Sasuke hit some crazy dives to the outside, and just a real good match. And it's just awesome, man. It's funny, looking at that Chris Benoit, towards the end of WWE, you talk about the road is owning somebody. I mean, he looked like a young teenager at this time, and just fantastic wrestling all throughout. Any thoughts?
No, I don't think I've ever seen this tournament.
I have a VHS tape, man. Maybe I'll send it up to you sometime so you can put it on
YouTube. I've seen like Sasuke and Liger like on YouTube or something.
Sure you've seen the Benoit DVD, right?
Yeah.
It's got like at least two. It's got the Eddie and the Sasuke match on there.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah. And but yeah, that's just a fantastic.
Sometimes when it comes to Japanese, it's hard for me to remember what I've seen. I don't know the names, just. I don't know.
Yeah,
just go together. I don't know what it is.
I'm sure most of the Japanese guys you remember would be the guys who wrestled on the super shows.
Yeah, guys like that.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, that was just fantastic. So We got 11 minutes here, so we'll just, you pick one, and then we'll just continue on another in the future, since we're not even close to getting done here.
Okay, let's go to.
I guess we should do. I know. I just said you could pick, but I guess we should do WrestleMania.
Okay, we'll start up.
I'll let you go ahead and describe this one.
Yeah, this was 1988. The WWF Championship was vacated after the big match on February the 5th with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, where Andre pinned Hogan, but there was a imposter referee. Was it Dave Hebner or Earl Hebner was the imposter? I can't remember.
Earl was the imposter.
Earl was the imposter. Yeah, because I remember he was doing, like, stuff with Crockett, like, earlier that year, and Dave Hebner was there as a referee. And
Yeah,
and so Ted DiBiase bought the championship from Andre the Giant, even though Andre said that he bought the World Tag Team Championship. It was actually the WWF Championship. And I just remember Hogan's promo after, "How much did it cost for the plastic surgery, brother? How much did that cost? It was two of them, Mean Gene." I mean, yeah. And so, yeah, they held the title up, and they were going to have this big first ever big tournament for it at Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, because of the match, the match on February the 5th automatically received a bye into the quarterfinals. So had the first match with Ted DiBiase with Andre and Virgil. He beat Hacksaw Jim Duggan. With a knee to the back, Andre had tripped Duggan from the outside, and so DiBiase capitalized and got the win. And that's what started the Andre Hacksaw Duggan feud that we were forced to sit through for the next several months. Don Morocco defeated the superstar Billy Graham, defeated Dino Bravo by disqualification. Don Morocco was ripped at this point. He wasn't like fat like he used to be.
He was fucking huge, and all his veins were like popping out of his arms. I mean,
I know.
He was all jacked up.
Yeah, he beat Dino Bravo with who had Frenchie Martin with him by disqualification.
And I always remember fucking reading about fucking Dino Bravo in the aftermath, and they made him out to be this badass, like he was the best Canadian wrestler out there, and that dude sucks, dude. And how the fuck do you use a shitty-ass side slam as your finisher, and you're setting it up with a fucking pile driver?
Yeah, I know.
Like, what the fuck? Reverse that, you know? Use the pile driver as your finisher. That was just stupid. I'm sorry the dude got murdered and shit, but god damn, dude, that sucks.
And then the next match, Greg Valentine pinned Ricky Steamboat, which, I don't know, I thought that was weird at the time. I thought they'd at least have Steamboat go over and maybe do another match with Savage, you know, in the next round. It made sense to me. But, no, Greg Valentine just pinned him clean. And this is the first appearance of the Little Dragon, if you remember.
Yeah, that was cool.
He brought his son out with him. So, I think this was his last match in WWF for 3 years. Because after this, he took off about a year and then went to WCW. Randy Savage with Elizabeth pinned Butch Reed with Slick in about 4 minutes with the flying elbow. It was an okay match. A one-man gang defeated Bam Bam Bigelow by count-out. This was so stupid. Okay, Bam Bam goes over the top rope, then he's up on the apron, and he's trying to get back in the ring, and one-man gang is just sitting there still pounding on him, and the ref just keeps counting him out. You know, like, while the guy's now, you know, whenever somebody's pounding on somebody outside the ring like that, you know the referee's supposed to stop the count and move the guy's back. He just kept counting and counting. He just went to the 10 count while he was just sitting there beating the crap out of him while he's standing on the outside. I thought that was stupid. I think this was Bam Bam's probably last match in WWF. Maybe not. Jake Roberts fought Rick Rude to a 15-minute time limit draw in 15 minutes and 15 seconds.
I'm sure that was pretty good.
Yeah. Then they had the first match of the next round with Hogan fought Andre the Giant to a double disqualification when Hogan and Andre took turns hitting one another with a steel chair. So they got them out, and I don't know, these matches, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, they were terrible. Not like I expected anything to be good.
WrestleMania 3 was 5 stars, dude. There's like a million people in that building to see
that
match.
No, I don't think that WrestleMania, I don't have so much hate for that WrestleMania 3 match as most do. I don't know why, but I just think it's because of spectacle, just because all in front of all the people makes it great, you know? So, I love Andre missing, acting like he headbutted the ring post, even though he didn't come close to it, but whatever. Let's see, Ted DiBiase pinned Don Morocco with a hot shot to go to the finals, and Randy Savage pinned Greg Valentine with inside cradle to go to the next round, because DiBiase got into the finals because of the time limit draw with Jake the Snake and Ravishing Rick Rude. And then Randy Savage defeated the one-man gang by disqualification when grabbed Slick's cane and tried to use it against Savage. And then he went to the finals with Randy Savage and Ted DiBiase with the elbow after Hogan came out and hit Ted DiBiase with the chair. So a lot of people don't like this show. I like this show for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't know what it was. Maybe I was just so young. I didn't see how shitty it was back then.
Well, it seemed like it was important. It seemed like it was important because it was for the world title.
Plus, it was awesome. It was the first, like, it had that awesome case to the tape, you know, where that had that pop-out Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant when you went and bought the tape.
Yeah.
You remember when you opened it up? Because it was like a four-hour tape, so it got two tapes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that.
I always liked those because, I mean, it's just like several hours I get to listen to Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon do, you know, in the broadcast booth. I love that. They were great together.
Yeah, they
didn't
awesome.
Get to work with each other unless it was at WrestleMania or something. So.
Yeah, they were great. And we just got 3 minutes left, so just real quick, let me get the plugs out. I think I forgot to do it on the last show. Everyone check out Angry Marks. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. Go ahead with your plug.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock, me and Sinbad are going to be doing an episode of Pro Wrestling Flashback and going to start part two of our look at WCW from 1998. So that'll be at 3 Eastern, 2 Central tomorrow afternoon. And just go to blogtalkradio.com/Couture, and you'll find the show there.
Cool. And go ahead and finish on this tournament, and we'll go ahead and wrap up after that.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah,
and
it was.
Everyone won the title. So.
And it also set up. It also set up the very like the long in the making feud between Hogan and Savage. So,
yeah.
That was pretty.
I mean,
cool.
You can
but
see
we'll
right after this match when they were celebrating in the ring, you're getting Hogan and Savage the next year. So.
I mean, it set up the next year. I mean, back when they planned a year in advance and not fucking changing the show fucking 10 minutes before Raw. And stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's ironic because they did plan that a year in advance this year or for next year. So.
All right, let me throw this in real quick. Stevie J is sending me my 10,000th text for the night. Check out Angry Marks. Check out AngryMarks.com, the Angry Marks show, because they had Kenny the King Bolin on the show. So everyone check that out. So we'll be back next week with Michael Elgin from ROH. And then I'm not sure if we're having a show in 2 weeks or not. We'll decide that we might have to do it on a different night if we do. So we will talk to everybody then. So what?
I said, why would we not have a show?
Because I will be in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's right, Las Vegas. I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about the Vegas trip coming up next week. So that should be cool. So everybody come back next week, and we'll talk to everybody then. And we will see you later.